and welcome to the Friday, January 9th, 2015 edition of On Iowa Politics. I'm James Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and with me today are Christinia Crippas of the Waterloo Courier. Good morning, Christinia.
Good morning, James.
Ed Tibbetts of the Quad City Times. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning.
Aaron Murphy of the Sioux, not of the Sioux City Journal. That's Brett Hayworth of the Sioux City Journal. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning.
And Aaron Murphy is at the State House for the Lee Newspapers. Hello, Aaron.
Good morning, James.
And just to check on everybody's well-being, I'm going to ask you what the temperature is. It's a balmy 1 degree here in Cedar Rapids. Ed, how are you doing?
Not too bad. It's in single digits in Davenport, but my mind isn't real where it just turned on.
Okay. And Christinia?
We're at 2 degrees.
Okay. And Brett, in western Iowa, how is it over there?
2 degrees also, and 10 degrees later today would probably feel balmy.
Yeah. And Aaron, how are things in the banana belt of Iowa down in Des Moines?
Well, as you keep going south, the temperature warms up a little bit, so I'm at a robust 3 degrees here in Des Moines.
So if we total our temperatures, I think we're in double digits.
Maybe.
You can find On Iowa Politics on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. This week, straw poll decision, standing up to the boss, and let the sausage making begin. First, the Iowa GOP straw poll is in the news again. The Republican Party of Iowa State Central Committee will meet Saturday to make a decision on the future of its straw poll. Depending on who you ask, the quadrennial fundraiser has held each August before the first in the nation precinct caucuses has never been a great fundraiser, and it's been a poor predictor of precinct caucus success. George W. Bush is the only one to win the straw poll, the caucuses, and the GOP nomination. Bob Dole tied with Phil Graham at the 1995 straw poll before going on to win the caucuses and the nomination. Other straw poll winners include Presidents Michelle Bachmann, Mitt Romney, and Pat Robertson. Ed, there have been some developments in this story over the past 24 hours that make it appear more certain that the Central Committee will vote to continue the staple of the campaign season. Bring us up to date on why the Central Committee is faced with this decision and what's likely to happen tomorrow.
Well, what's likely to happen is the straw poll will go on. Most Central Committee members are said to want it, and the RNC, as you noted, now has said that the straw poll should contravene party rules pertaining to the nomination calendar as long as certain steps are followed. The RNC says that the straw poll shouldn't be portrayed as any kind of scientific poll, that candidates should be strong on participating, and that media expectations about it should be managed. I'm not really sure how they're going to be able to pull off the latter, but it appears that everybody is on board with the straw poll, with the exception of those states who have always objected to it because they believe that it gives Iowa two shots at passing judgment on the presidential field. And let's be honest, the previous straw polls have certainly had an effect on the presidential race. Some have dropped out as a result, some have bolstered their prospects as a result. And so it will be interesting to see how this year's straw poll, assuming that on Saturday that the Senate committee goes ahead and approves of it, how it will be carried out, how many folks participate, and how they'll talk about it, how the party will talk about it. So, you know, I think the drama over whether the straw poll will live or die is sort of, you know, settled, and will be, appears to be, as it will be better on Saturday. But I think there's still going to be a lot of talking about what it means, what it doesn't mean, and what that might mean to the main event, which is the Iowa caucus.
That's one of the things I was wondering about is I've heard some talk, and I think it was – I'm not sure if it was Jeff Kaufman, the state party chair, or Governor Branstad talking about maybe having regional straw polls, like four regional straw polls around the state, and breaking it down into a smaller event. And there's been some talk about, you know, sort of changing the format a little bit. Are they likely to make a decision on that Saturday, or do you think that's a decision that will come down the road? If they change the venue or the format of the straw poll?
Well, I always saw the idea of a regional straw poll as an alternative to the Iowa straw poll. And I don't think that, my perception anyway, is that I don't think there really is a need for an alternative anymore. provided that the Iowa straw poll is carried out in a way that that teaches the approval of the RNC. And so I don't know that I'd look for that to happen, but who knows? I mean, when it comes to the nominating calendar and all the components of it, whether you think the straw poll is a component of the nominating calendar or not, there's always change in the offing that's possible.
Given the opinion from the Republican National Committee, what's to prevent any other state from adopting the same straw poll format or some variation of it and saying, hey, this is, you know, we're not, this is not an official vote, a scientific vote, a survey, anything like that. But I mean, why couldn't it, 49 other states have straw polls?
Well, I don't think there's anything that stops states from doing that. But as with any of these events, what really matters when such an event is put forward is how much attention does the media give it, how much attention do the candidates give.
Is this more of a media event than anything? I mean, media come from all over the country to, you know, it's sort of a cattle call of candidates. But I'm wondering if it hasn't become more of a media event than anything else, given the fact that the outcome isn't a very good predictor of future success.
Well, I would say it's certainly a big media event. I don't know how others on the call feel about it, but I think it's always had that strong component. Part of what gives it its fuel is how many reporters show up.
This is Brett. The thing I've been thinking about the last few days is the fundraising aspect that comes with the straw poll. It's a big event to raise money for the Iowa Republican Party, and I'm wondering if you strip away the straw poll, have the same event that the cattle call for candidates on August Saturday, I don't think it would get as much attention. So I'm wondering if that fundraising aspect is in the minds. And I haven't heard much about that, as this has played out. And I had a chance to talk to Kaufman recently about this, and I failed to ask him about, how the fundraising factors into that. But I think there has to be something to that as they make their decision.
Yeah, talking to former party staffers, some of them say that it wasn't a great fundraiser because it's very costly to put on. There's a lot that goes into, renting the venue, the hill, the Coliseum down at Iowa State, and everything else that goes into it, that in the end it's not a huge fundraiser. I'm assuming that Jeff Kaufman would like to change that, that they would walk away with a little more change in their pocket if they have a straw poll. But I think, that is one of the challenges of the straw poll. The other challenge probably is making sure that you get all the candidates there, or most of the candidates. And we keep hearing, that some people wouldn't participate because it's sort of more of a venue for social conservatives than a moderate or middle of the road candidate like a Jeb Bush or someone like that. And I think if they can't attract the major candidates, then it sort of weakens the event all the way around. But I guess we'll have to wait and see if they go ahead with the straw poll and if they make any changes and then see who shows up.
James, it strikes me that it's a bit of a conundrum this year as it hasn't been in the last year, because on the one hand, to get folks to participate, one would have to think that you have to convince them that this is meaningful. But to stay on the good side of the RNC, you have to convince the rest of us that it's not. It'll be interesting to see how they sort of walk that line.
It will indeed. Moving on, standing up to the boss. We're not talking about the boss, Bruce Springsteen, but John Boehner, the boss of the U.S. House. And as our clever On Iowa Politics team has pointed out, there are obvious differences between Boehner and the boss. Boehner tends to weep. The boss makes other people cry. Boehner has trouble with his rank and file, while the boss is loved so much he performs for hours on end. And Boss Boehner was probably one of those who thought Born in the USA was a great patriotic song because he didn't realize there was a dark side to it. The first kick I took was when I hit the ground. Western Iowa Congressman Steve King has had a rocky relationship with Boehner, and he stood up to the speaker by casting his vote for speaker for a little-known Florida Congressman Daniel Webster. Brett, we rely on you for all things Steve King. What should we make of that vote, and will there be any impact?
Well, first of all, I need to, I guess, share why King didn't support Boehner as a leader. He feels essentially, the Congressman King feels essentially Boehner has punted a couple times when stronger action should have been given to push back against President Obama. One of those would be he didn't feel like Boehner has sufficiently helped repeal the Affordable Care Act, the health care reform from 2010. He doesn't feel that Boehner's pushed back against Obama's order to halt deportations. So for, and it goes on to, like you said, a longer standing kind of rocky relationship with Boehner. So that's why. And as far as to what to make of it, if there'll be any impact, we know that Steve King certainly speaks his mind. He's his own man, so to speak, and we'll take some controversial stances. As far as impact, I guess one way to look at it would be how King would be viewed in Iowa and, you know, potentially a reelection, assuming that he would run again. And because I don't really expect any change on that, I think Iowans know who the conservatives who support Steve King overwhelmingly aren't troubled by this sort of a move of, you know, who he votes for House Speaker, and probably some of them were probably hearing about that. As far as the other aspect of how it might impact him, it would be how he would work within the House hierarchy, and you know, that remains to be seen. King himself said he's not worried about that. He had a tweet on, I think it was Tuesday, the day that they voted, that let me get this right. There's no political consequence outside the Beltway for voting against Boehner for Speaker. And so I guess what could be pushback against King would, you know, would Boehner strip him from some committees? Would Boehner, you know, undercut any, you know, ways to support King within the House? And from what it appears, as of yesterday, they gave out committee assignments on Thursday. And Steve King, for the last 2 years, was on the House Judiciary Immigration Subcommittee. He's on it again for the next 2 years. So as of any immediate strings that maybe Boehner would pull to get him off of that committee, that didn't happen. King is still on the Agriculture Committee. So from at least from outward appearances, there's nothing thus far.
There are no consequences. Christina, King wasn't the only one who voted against Boehner. Rod Blum, a newly elected member of Congress from the Iowa's 1st District, also voted for Daniel Webster. Same question to you, Christina. What's the impact? I mean, why did he vote against Boehner, and is there likely to be any pushback or fallout from this decision?
You know, I think I agree with Fred. Right now, all outward appearances are that there's not an impact to Rod Blum. But I do think it was a really interesting vote because, you know, had he voted for Speaker Boehner, I think none of us would have even been talking about it today. He would have just probably been seen as not wanting to make waves on the first day of Congress, you know, even if, you know, you're a more conservative Republican. You know, it may not be that the first vote is how you're going to judge the new congressman. But by voting with the minority of Republicans, he was sure to get extra attention. His motivation, he said in a statement, had to do with voters in the district wanting change. And I saw that as kind of an interesting way to kind of parse it, because on the one hand, it signifies to the more conservative base that you would like to see a change in leadership for probably the further right. But for everybody else, it also kind of signifies that he's not afraid to make waves. And in a Democratic district, I think, or Democrat-leaning district, it's interesting that he decided to set himself apart so early on.
You know, that struck me too, Christina, that, you know, I think he's proved his Tea Party chops in winning the GOP nomination, and he seemed to have the support of the Tea Party throughout the whole campaign. He's already being labeled a one-term congressman because this is a Democratic-leaning district. And it just seemed to me, you know, why would you want to reinforce your Tea Party status when you know you're going to be a prime target for the DCCC in 2 years, and they'll try to paint him as being out there on the fringe rather than in the middle of the road where most Northeast Iowa voters see themselves. So the fallout may be in the next election rather than, in Congress itself. But, he's got a couple years to make his case for reelection, I guess. The legislature will convene on Monday, and as Mark Twain said, no man's life, liberty, or property are safe while the legislature is in session. So, Aaron, that raises the question, what's at risk this year with the legislature going back to work?
Well, you can start, I suppose, with a couple cents on a gallon of gas as the headway continues towards taking a look at the gas tax. It'll be an interesting session. The election produced status quo split controlled government, so you got the same main players back in action. Obviously, new rank and file members in both caucuses, but the control and the leadership remain the same. I think you will see them try to tackle some big ticket items. In particular, like the gas tax, we already talked about the broadband internet, taking another crack at that. Governor Branstad would like to see anti-bullying legislation introduced again. So I think we may have a similar session as we did in our last non-election year in 2013, where there were some really big items on the table. Whether those make it all the way through like they did in 2013, that remains to be seen.
This is kind of going around the horn here. Anybody hearing their local legislator speak about anything other than the gas tax, I guess? Are you getting any sense of what issues are likely to come to the forefront that might have, particular local or regional interest where you live? Ed, let's start with you. Anything that the Quad Cities delegation seems to be pushing this year or talking about, whether they're pushing it or not, but just, at the top of their list?
Well, as you mentioned, the gas tax, people are talking about that. Absent that, I know that over this part of the state, mental health redesign is fun, bad stuff. With local officials is very important to them. So I think they'll probably push the Quad City delegation to talk about that. That's one of those things that I'm mostly sort of behind me. Although, frankly, I think one of the more interesting bread and butter issues that could come up will be this debate over the school calendar. Lots of people have kids in school, and some are put off at a late start date because it interrupts their they want to get them back to school. Others don't like the earlier start date because it interrupts their vacation, and I think that's one of those issues that tend to draw some attention to folks who might not ordinarily plug into politics. So I think that'll be interesting to watch, to what extent the legislature takes that.
Okay. Brett, anything on the radar over in Western Iowa?
Yeah, one thing, I don't think this is maybe somewhat parochial, but it also would certainly be a statewide issue. But one thing that Sioux City has been discussing, at least in our newspaper, due to a movie that came out, but school bullying is, I've talked to legislators recently from Sioux City. Chris Hall is a Democrat, and then Ron Jorgensen in the House is the Education Chairman Committee. But there was a movie that in 2010 that reviewed bullying throughout the U.S., a documentary, and Sioux City was one of the three schools that was part of that. And since then, there's been a big push in Northwest Iowa and throughout. The governor's held anti-bullying conferences the last couple years. And he came to speak to City in October, Branstad did. And the last, as you guys know, the last 2 years they attempted ways to toughen, to push back against bullying in schools were debated, and there was a couple bills in the House and in the Senate that passed, but they weren't in the same form, so it didn't pass. Anyway, that will be brought forward again this year, and a big aspect of it is parental notification. How parents would be brought into the process, and then if off, I guess, social media, non-school, Facebook, Twitter, that sort of thing could be brought in line for being overviewed by schools. So
okay.
I find it a very interesting issue.
Christina, anything up in Black Hawk County that is on everybody's agenda?
Yeah, I agree with Ed. I think the gas tax is definitely one of the statewide issues that is being paid attention to here. But for us, I think it's what will happen with the University of Northern Iowa and the funding formula. I think, you know, there's a sense here that, the University of Northern Iowa has been underfunded by, the state over the years, and they'd like to see a larger push toward that. But, you know, recognizing, I think, that there will be some contention over that issue as the other universities get involved and, have generally seen their budgets flip in, you know, over since the recession as well. So I think that will be the big issue for this area is, whether the lawmakers take up performance-based funding or whether they make UNI whole or what they say would be make them whole. So that's our big one for this year.
And, of course, in Cedar Rapids, the big issue is the, plan to have the legislature grant a license for a smoke-free casino in Cedar Rapids. And I'm sure all the delegations from Woodbury, Black Hawk, and, Scott County will be backing that issue. Well, that's it for this edition of On Iowa Politics. I hope it was worth your time. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. You can find us every week on the homepages of the Quad City Times, Sioux City Journal, Muscatine Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Waterloo Courier, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. The Olympics, an indie rock group from Cedar Rapids, will take us out. If you know a band or talented Iowa musician who should be on our show, drop us a line or, better yet, a sound file. And remember to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes and Stitcher. For Brett, Christina, Ed, Aaron, and our producer Max, I'm James Lynch. Thanks for listening.